Owens, first take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Happy Friday. Holy cow. Pass the Tylenol. You made it to the end of the week. We'll get you some headlines you need to know. Not surprisingly at this point, the MLS has just begun discussions with MLS Players Association about having players accept significant salary cuts due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is according to multiple sources. The talks took place on Thursday by a conference call that included the MLS commissioner, deputy commissioner, and the MLSPA executive board. So these discussions come amid the backdrop of the league-wide shutdown that's been in place since March 12th. We'll see what it means for the MLS people moving forward. Speaking of changes, interesting pick here, interesting moment here, I should say. The NFL draft is going to be held as a mock virtual draft on Monday so that teams get a chance at a trial run before the actual draft kicks off under these unprecedented circumstances later in the week. So the exercise likely is going to give GMs the opportunity to redraft some NFL legends, according to ESPN's Dan Graziano. Of course, teams do not want to tip their hand at all at what their actual intent is, so they'll use legends to go in and give everybody an opportunity to sort of at least practice what the draft process looks like. And a little bit of college basketball news. North Carolina freshman Cole Anthony, a projected lottery pick, has declared his eligibility for the NBA draft. He did that today. In the announcement, he thanked Coach Roy Williams and the staff at North Carolina, as well as his teammates and fans. He's ranked 11th in the ESPN Top 100 for the 2020 draft after averaging 18.5 points, 5.7 boards, and 4 assists per game for the Tar Heels. He did miss a significant chunk of the season following knee surgery, but he has now declared his intent to enter the NBA draft. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN News. Find something fun to do. It's Friday. Remind yourself that it's Friday. Get out, take a walk, do something different that you don't usually do. Enjoy the fact that you made it through the week, even though the days all start to run together. Let's at least still find joy in Fridays, as that's always going to be a big deal for all of us. But we're going to get to some straight talk. We're asking you guys to chime in. Straight Talk Wireless. We're asking you guys to chime in throughout the course of the day. I want you to know, I want you to tell me what you think of all of these topics as it starts. And we're going to start with a little bit of Splash Brothers here. All right. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have had tremendous success, obviously. But after a recent story in a book about the potential that they would have been traded to the New Orleans Hornets in 2011, the question is, would Klay and Steph had as much success if they had been in New Orleans? Chime in, tell me what you think. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Would the Splash Brothers have been great no matter where they went, even if that meant New Orleans? In the meantime, while you guys get your take stacked in, let's hear from Stephen A. and Max on what they think about the Splash Brothers and their accomplishments no matter where they would have played.
I'm partial to shooters, and I believe Steph Curry to be the greatest shooter we've ever seen in the history of basketball. And I believe Klay Thompson to be one of the top 5 shooters we've ever seen in a game of basketball. And we got to remember, it's not just Bird. I go back, Jay, to the days of downtown Freddie Brown with the Seattle Supersonics, to Dale Ellis, Ricky Pearson. This is before Reggie Miller and Ray Allen and Allen Houston and those guys. I'm talking about... I grew up idolizing when everybody was loving Dr. J, and I certainly loved Dr. J, Julius Erving. I was an Andrew Toney fan for the Philadelphia 76ers, who I believe arguably had one of the greatest, if not the greatest, mid-range shooting game we may have seen in the history of basketball. His mid-range game was just lethal. But I'm telling you right now, this backcourt is the greatest shooting backcourt that I've ever seen in the history of basketball. I've never seen anything like it. And I believe that when you have shooters like that, it's not to denigrate in any way Draymond Green, who plays his role exceptionally well, a leader, a champion, all of that other stuff. But I'm telling you right now, it's easier to find the parts necessary to win when you have guys who can shoot long range, mid range, short range, free throw line, the way these two brothers can shoot. Steph and Klay are the real deal. I'm not saying they might have won. They would have won 3 championships and won the 5 straight NBA finals, but I think they would have won a couple of championships together no matter where the hell they were.
I don't think they would have won any together off the Warriors, certainly not with the Hornets. I totally disagree. First of all, let's recall what happened in Golden State. They won a championship against the LeBron James team, missing not only Kyrie Irving, but also Kevin Love It was LeBron James and Matthew Dellavedova is the second best player on the team. And by the way, they went six games. To me, it is clear, had LeBron been crewed up, he beats them that year. If you're going six games with Dellavedova as second best, what about when Kevin Love is third best? You're going to win that series. By the way, the next year, the Warriors got even better, 173 games, and the Cavs beat them. It took the joining of Kevin Durant. Like, when Durant joined them, then it was like, okay, game over. How do we know that happens with the Hornets? That's one. Two, how did they even get to the position where they were in the finals in the first place? Just because they had the greatest shooting backcourt of all time? No, and in fact, if you look at the history of the league, and I realize the Warriors have changed history in a way in this respect, it's never the two best shooters who are winning. The two best perimeter players, a big and another perimeter player. You know, that's usually a formula, not just two guys who can shoot the lights out. Klay Thompson is a great player. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. He's capable of getting hotter than anyone ever, scoring 26 points in a quarter, and that was his second best quarter one year. Second best quarter, because he set the record with 37. That said, the second most important player on the Warriors that enables them to do what they do is Draymond Green. It's Steph's pick-and-roll partner. It's the guy who, when he was shooting it, allowed you to play five out. It's, you know, the passing, the ball handling, all that stuff from your so-called big. That really revolutionized it, made it small ball. And why were they all used that way? Mark Jackson did a great job developing them, instilling confidence, getting to play defense. But if you look at the offensive rating, it was near the bottom of the league compared to what they had. Steve Kerr comes in, then they change everything. And then you not only have those, you know, Draymond Green, who I mentioned, what about Andre Iguodala? Andre Iguodala ain't growing on trees. It's not like, it's not so, oh yeah, sure, you can just replace Andre Iguodala, finals MVP. Look, the Warriors were very smart, very lucky, and still, before KD joined, we're also lucky to even win one championship. I don't see that for the Hornets.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. That's some straight talk. Straight talk wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. I don't know. System has to matter. And that's, I'll keep saying this because every athlete I've talked to at ESPN will just sit there. And former athletes, current athletes, they will tell you all day long, especially after their career is over, that system fit matters, coaching matters. Did they find a way to get the best out of the athletes? And, you know, we constantly look at players for why they stink, and we rarely look at the systems they're in to explain why they had great success or why they didn't play well enough. There has to be some credit to system here and the evolution and being willing to go out and run this system. Yes, I understand that, frankly, these guys shoot so well, they could have been great with anywhere. But could they have been this level of great? And there is still some skill to even managing personalities. I mean, that's one of the things that we're going to see, I think, a lot of Phil Jackson from when we see The Last Dance this weekend. And what we've seen from Steve Kerr is the ability, and this isn't credited enough from coaches, the ability to come in and find a way to have all of these superstars and still have everyone feel like they get fed. I mean, that's not simple to do. So could they have had tremendous success? Sure. Could they have had that level of success? That's hard for me to see. I mean, I have to give some credit to the system, not just to the players that are in it. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're taking your take on everything as we go through. Don't forget, tune in to The Last Dance and behind the scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. 10-part series begins Sunday, April 19th, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Going to be interesting to see, you know, MJ in that situation, but also just to see what Phil Jackson's really like behind the scenes. So looking forward to all of that from that documentary. In the meantime, there's a little bit of NFL news that came out yesterday in the form of Bill O'Brien speaking. Bill O'Brien spoke to the media. All the teams are doing that as we get close to the NFL draft. And of course, if he's going to speak to the media, he's going to be asked about his still head scratching decision to ship off DeAndre Hopkins for essentially nothing. This is what he had to say when he was asked about the Hopkins trade.
The production is there, and everybody knows what that production is. I'd say with 3 years left on his contract, you know, his representatives, himself, myself, and our team of people, we spoke and we felt like, relative to what I said earlier, salary cap, future, our team being able to provide our team with more and more role players, layers of players, it was in the best interest of our team to move DeAndre to Arizona.
That's Bill O'Brien's thought on it, focusing specifically on money and the well-documented report that, DeAndre was interested in more money, and even though he had years left on his contract. The question is everybody buying the reason or the excuse that Bill O'Brien gave for this trade? Max and Stephen A. chimed in, but they were joined by a very passionate Marcus Spears to break down Bill O'Brien's comments.
The reality of the situation is that there's been a mountain of evidence throughout the years that Bill O'Brien has made his own decisions. I'm not saying he didn't consult with people or he didn't tell anybody, but he's made decisions for personal reasons. DeAndre Hopkins was a personal reason. They didn't get along. If Bill O'Brien had a great relationship with DeAndre Hopkins, DeAndre Hopkins would still be a member of the Houston Texans. You know why? Because what he had, Marcus, on his contract, like 2 or 3 years left on his deal, this is a future Hall of Fame receiver. He's had over 1,000 receiving yards for the last 5 seasons. He's had over 100 receptions the last 2. You have a star young quarterback in Deshaun Watson who loves this kid. They were like brothers with each other. They both went to the same university, Clemson University and what have you. You know what time it is, and you got to take that into consideration as well. But what did you do? You decided 2 years in advance, you were going to make this decision on DeAndre Hopkins. It's because y'all did not have an ideal relationship with each other, and that superseded your football judgment. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Bill O'Brien doesn't know football. The man's been to the playoffs about 4 different times. He's won a division just as many times the AFC South. We get all of that, even though he has a sniff at a title. We understand all of that, but I'm not going to. I saw the job that he did at Penn State, which was a damn good job. I know what credentials he had as an offensive coordinator working with Tom Brady before he went to Penn State. I'm not here to impugn his football acumen. A matter of fact, it's because of that I know it's personal. Because him being as smart of a football mind as he is, because he's certainly not a dummy, there is no way on earth you move DeAndre Hopkins unless your personal feelings usurped and superseded your football judgment and acumen. He could try to slice it and explain it any way he wants to. But the city of Houston, H-Town, needs to hold him accountable for this. Because for some reason, Rick Smits, the GM, is gone. Multiple other folks who've worked under him when they've struggled and didn't live up to expectations is gone. Somehow, some way, Bill O'Brien is always the one who ends up standing since he's arrived in Houston. It seems to be everybody's fault but his. At some point in time, H-Town has to say, enough's enough. The moves that he's made is costing us too much.
Bill O'Brien needed a lawyer to be with him during this interview for somebody to tell him to shut the hell up. All right? Because you keep talking yourself into this hole. First of all, in today's NFL, who in the hell is planning for 2 to 3 years out when you have a franchise guy? Find me one organization. We talk about teams rebuild. Are you getting rid of players? Or Bill O'Brien, are you saying, I got rid of DeAndre Hopkins to start to build layers of players for the Houston Texans in the future? First of all, what gives you the nerve to think you still gonna be there? Who's telling you you can make these moves and we can wait 2 or 3 years from now to possibly have a run at winning a Super Bowl, let alone trying to win more than 1 or 2 playoff games? The second thing is this, and I love the point you brought up, Max. When you start talking about the value, right? We look at these receivers. What did Cleveland get for Odell Beckham Jr.? What did Buffalo just get for Stephon Diggs? What did
First
they just
rounders.
Get for Brandon Cooks? What did they just get for Brandon Cooks to go? Listen, this is personal to what you were saying, Stephen A. This is Bill O'Brien trying to emulate the guy in New England. This is also Bill O'Brien having it's almost arrogant to tell your team that I'm going to get rid of arguably the best offensive weapon that we have because I want to build 2 or 3 years from now. What other players know that they going to be there 2 or 3 years from now for you to give them a chance to try to win in this overall grand scheme of a plan? You just got rid of one of the top 3 receivers in the NFL, basically for a 3rd-round pick, and you want to sell to not only your franchise quarterback, but the rest of your team, we build them for 2 or 3 years from now. Man, get the hell out of here.
take, your take on ESPN News. And look, Marcus is speaking truth there. I mean, everything is so fleeting and temporary, especially in the NFL. When you see a window, you have to maximize the window. And that's why I think it's maddening and frustrating to so many of us when we talk, when we look specifically at Bill O'Brien and what he hasn't been able to accomplish as the head coach right now. You have to look across the board and say, okay, what is he thinking and how does it make the team better? Now, I understand, and let me say loudly, I understand that it's head with Deshaun Watson. Let's remember that he's been playing on his rookie deal, right? So we all know that at this point, there's going to be a massive uptick in how much he costs. And so if you've got a receiver that's asking for more money and you're worried about these things, I can understand trying to look at, well, I don't know, maybe that's not the best idea. I understand why they're trying to be cautious for when you are in the window you're in right now and you have. He's just been wasted. I mean, this opportunity has been wasted, not because they haven't made the playoffs, not because they haven't been able to be competitive, but because they haven't been good enough. They have the type of guy that we should be speaking about in the same breath that we speak of guys like Patrick Mahomes. And they've had the weapons that should have made that attainable. So when you look across the board and you say, what's the problem? Well, the problem is not talent. And if the problem is talent, then the problem's the GM. So if the problem is not talent, then the problem is the coach. What do you do when they're the same person? That's the difficulty when you let the same person run everything. Because as much as we can talk about what the Texans do or don't have, the most important thing that the Texans do have is cap space. So if you're going to look across from a GM standpoint and say, we're worried about the extra money that he's going to cost in a few years, you're going to look at that as a reason why you're not going to sign him. Keep in mind that even without a new contract for Deshaun Watson, which, sure, could cost what? Let's say it costs $40 million. We'll go $40 million for Deshaun Watson. In 2 years, this Texans team has a projected $97 million worth of cap space. So you want to tell me why you couldn't keep the weapon that makes your quarterback the best he could possibly be? That's what doesn't make any sense. The arguments don't line up. The devil's in the details when it comes to this stuff. And it feels like Bill O'Brien is just throwing spaghetti at a wall to see what sticks. You know, the trade and the lack of return is going to be an inexcusable portion of how we judge Bill O'Brien moving forward. But I'll say it's rightfully so, because the expectations should be high when you have talent. The expectations should be high when you have brand name talent. And they've had that. Look at the guys they've had on the defensive side of the ball during his time as head coach. And then you have a brand name talent at quarterback that most teams would line up and give up anything to trade for. You've got somebody at quarterback in Deshaun Watson that is not just good, he's great. And what have you done with him? Have you maximized him? The answer is no. Why? If it's about the roster, then Bill O'Brien, the GM, should be fired. If it's about coaching the roster, then Bill O'Brien, the head coach, should be fired. But either way, when you have somebody that's desperate because he realizes that he's not likely going to step back and take one of the two jobs, more likely is that he's fired completely than he allows power to be stripped away. So now, all of a sudden, you've got somebody making the moves under the mindset of desperation and being able to sell a plan. That plan of, oh, we're building layers for years, takes away any accountability for right now. Well, look, of course production dipped. We had to deal away our best wide receiver because we're trying to build for the future. I mean, the fact that there's so much duplicity in the argument tells you that somebody's working with desperation, and desperation leads to somebody trying to save their job. And when you're coaching and running a franchise with desperation for a sales pitch that changes by the minute, you have no plan. Without a plan, you have no structure. Without a structure, you have no point. The Texans are the worst kind of bad. They're a bad that can't be fixed easily because there's no plan of action that gets them to better. That's why what Bill O'Brien has done, not just as coach, but also as the general manager to the Houston Texans, is inexcusable. It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitch. We'll take your take as we keep talking all things from First Take today. Coming up, got a little bit of Rams conversation. You guys still in on the Rams? Have you given up on the Rams? Do you think the Rams can do anything this year? We'll take your take on it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Where are you at this point on the Los Angeles Rams? But coming up, we'll talk about their underperformance and how they lost, obviously, a couple of big players this offseason. So what's next for the team? One of their wide receivers joined First Take today to break it down. You'll hear from him next. take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're about to get into the Rams, so I want your take. You guys in on the Rams? You think they're any good? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Are you out on the Rams altogether? Going to get some of your take on it. We'll do that just a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Speaking of the Rams, Cooper Kupp joined First Take today to talk about underachieving last year and what this offseason has been like as they've lost Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks.
Man, I mean, obviously we fell short of expectations this last year. There's no getting around that. And losing Brandon and Todd, I mean, incredible football players. But on top of that, also just really, you know, quality people that brought a lot to our team, brought a lot to our locker room outside of what they bring on the football field. So I'm going to miss those guys. But, you know, we've got incredible football players in each of those rooms. And, you know, I can't wait until we can get back out in the field again and see what these guys can do with the ball in their hands. And, you know, there's, you know, you go back to the drawing board, I think, a little bit. You got to refine your identity. And, you know, our expectations for ourselves haven't changed at all. You know, losing these guys, our expectations, our standards we hold ourselves to, that stuff remains the same. It's just about staying true to that, you know, grinding one day at a time, setting the foundation. And, you know, by the time this, you know, hopefully we get to get on the football field this year and play some ball. But, you know, our expectation is to go out there and be able to compete for championships.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I don't remember the last time we saw a team sort of fall so quickly, in the perception at least, and the amount of national coverage they get for everything that they're doing. But the Rams are a great example of that. Now, QB continued. We've done every day. We've taken a look at a different quarterback and a different team, and then we try and move it a step forward by bringing on an expert. We'll do that now as ESPN Rams reporter Lindsay Theory joins the show. Lindsay, thanks for the time. Hope you guys are safe and everything's great out there. When you look at the Rams this year and the fall off from what everyone expected, what is a reasonable expectation in your mind for the Rams going into this season?
Yeah, that's really hard to predict going into the season, just given the strength of the NFC West. Obviously, they finished third in the division last year. On paper, the Arizona Cardinals have gotten better this offseason. While the Rams, I mean, when you look kind of position by position what they've done over the offseason, there's no clear upgrades. I mean, they it was a great benefit for them to be able to re-sign Michael Brockers after it looked like he was initially leaving for the Baltimore Ravens. But from Todd Gurley to Brandon Cooks over on the defense, Dante Fowler, Corey Littleton, all those guys have been difference makers for the Rams the last few seasons, and now they're all gone.
Well, and where did this go wrong, Lindsay? Because this is, certainly wasn't the outcome we expected for the Rams a few years ago.
Yeah, it comes down to the salary cap, and the Rams' decision to sign Todd Gurley to a record-breaking deal, and then to right before that they signed Brandon Cooks to a whopper of a deal, and then it was Aaron Donald and then Jared Goff. And the way they were signing these deals, you know, a lot of people around the league were kind of scratching their head wondering how this was all going to work. And the Rams insisted that it would continue to work, and then it all kind of catches up to them, and now waiting in the queue to get paid is Jalen Ramsey. So really, it was just they were handing out money in such great amounts and so quickly that there was no real way in the long run to make any of this work.
We're talking to ESPN Rams reporter Lindsay Theory on First Take, Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz. So you mentioned the Gurley deal, and he's obviously now with Atlanta. But there was a moment there where Jared Goff sort of took the world by storm, and everybody thought it was fixed, and he's spectacular. Now it feels like people are scratching their head again. So where are you on him specifically as an elite quarterback in the NFL?
Well, it can't be overlooked that in his third season, he did lead the Rams, or help them greatly at least, to a Super Bowl appearance. And there were times that season when he looked absolutely spectacular. Now, last season, teams and their defenses, opponents tend to know that Todd Gurley wasn't necessarily the same Todd Gurley, or at least the Rams weren't using him in the same way, which really put Jared under the microscope and allowed defenses to do some different things. And we saw Jared struggle. Obviously, Gurley's gone this year, so it focus really turns to Jared. So I think going into season five for him now, we are really going to see whether he is the quarterback who can lead the team to a Super Bowl or whether he needs a really, really strong supporting cast around him in order for him to be successful.
Lindsay, the joke a year ago is if you'd ever had a dinner with Sean McVay, you were going to get a head coaching job in the NFL. But it feels like some of that shine has dulled as well. So what kind of eyes are there on Sean McVay right now as head coach to do something better with this team?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. And that starts with the fact that he really overhauled his coaching staff, at least the three coordinator positions over the offseason. He brought in an offensive coordinator because after Matt LaFleur left, for the Tennessee Titans a couple of years ago, he didn't replace him. He was the offensive coordinator, and he had kind of a duo, a run game coordinator, a pass game coordinator, but really that all came down to Sean. So he brought in some help there. As we all know, he did not bring back Wade Phillips, so he hired a new, young, unproven defensive coordinator, and then he lost his special teams coordinator. So all of that really puts the spotlight on Sean to figure out, okay, well, you brought in some guys who you wanted, and we'll see if that they can give him the help he needs. But also, if the defensive coordinator, if the offensive coordinator, if any of that doesn't go well, that's also on Sean. So I think by no means is he on a hot seat by any means, but he's starting to get looked at with a bit more critical eye after having so much success the first two seasons.
You mentioned earlier, we're talking to ESPN Rams reporter Lindsay Theory. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. You mentioned Jalen Ramsey still sort of sitting in the queue waiting to get paid. What's the latest there?
Yeah, the Rams have said that they've spoken with Jalen's representatives. They're all on the same page. However, they won't reveal what page that is. The Rams have really kind of stuck by the phrase that they're taking kind of one step at a time. They are getting through free agency. Now it's the draft. Once they get through that, then they will start looking at those extensions. But obviously the Rams gave up two first-round picks to trade for Jalen Ramsey. So a lot of the leverage is in Jalen's corner as they go to negotiate a long-term extension. And if you're the Rams, it looks like you really do have to get a deal done. Otherwise, it's going to really be a curious decision why you gave up two first-round picks for him.
If they don't get a deal done before the season starts, does it become an issue?
We asked Jalen. I asked Jalen that before he left for the offseason, and he didn't indicate that he would be holding out and whatnot. Like, he's indicated that he wants his money, but he'll be there. Now, when push comes to shove, it'll be really interesting to see how that goes when time comes for everybody to report to camp or however it's going to turn out this summer. It's definitely something to monitor because we all know that Jalen has made no qualms about it in the past about wanting to get paid. And so it's either going to be him showing up in a Brinks truck or maybe not at all.
We're talking to ESPN Rams reporter Lindsay Theory on First Take Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz. So I want to get your thoughts, too, on something you quote tweeted a couple of days ago from the LA Times. They're reporting that the Los Angeles mayor has told high-level staff from several departments a big gathering sports and concerts might not be approved until 2021. Obviously, everybody's looking for when sports can return, but how are the Rams as an organization dealing with not only NFL, but also the government and trying to figure out when that return could happen?
Yeah, that's the interesting part. Well, that was the Los Angeles mayor, and the Rams' new stadium is actually in the city of Inglewood, which has its own mayor. So the city of Inglewood hasn't made any announcements as far as big gatherings and what they're anticipating. So it's a little bit of a, kind of a logistics there with between being in Los Angeles versus Inglewood. I did reach out to the Rams the other day to see kind of what their thoughts were on what the mayor was saying and didn't receive a response. But I think right now, what we've been told through this whole coronavirus situation is they're really just kind of taking it day by day, and they're moving forward planning as though the season's going to happen, that the season's going to happen with fans, and they're going to be willing to adjust, obviously, as needed.
Have you been able to get any sense on how comfortable they are, Lindsay, with the draft process overall that we're going to see in less than a week virtually being done?
Well, I know last week they were concerned because Sean McVay's house apparently doesn't have a hard wire for a phone jack for a telephone. So that was, who would have thought, right? So that was the big concern, was finding a hard wire for a phone jack. But other than that, the Rams have great IT people, so I think they'll be able to figure it out. They seem pretty technologically savvy outside of Les Snead, who tends to make a lot of jokes about his abilities with technology. But I think they're pretty confident that they'll be able to pull it together like every other team in the league.
You guys can follow her on Twitter at Lindsay Theory. Lindsay, we really appreciate your time. Stay safe out there. Thank you so much for the coverage and
Thanks
the expertise.
Thanks so much.
On it.
Thank you.
So, Lindsay breaking it down, and just a reminder that obviously, California is going to be a complication that the NFL won't know an answer to anytime soon. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You guys in or out on the Rams at this point? Eric in Washington, what's your take on the Rams?
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Heck yeah, man.
Hey, I'm all in, bro. I mean, I'm a big Rams fan, so, I'm kind of partial to that, but you got Malcolm Brown coming back that broke his arm in 2018 when we did our Super Bowl run, and he was on track to have a great season before that happened. Darrell Henderson behind him I think he's going to have a breakout season this year. You got Robert Woods still, who's probably the greatest route runner in football, period. Cooper Kupp, Josh Reynolds will step up. On defense, you got Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, obviously. You just build around him. Brockers came back. I think he's going to have a great year. I think Floyd that we just signed is going to be going to come back, are going to do good for us. Troy Hill and John Johnson, who also got hurt last year, is going to be back. So I think it's really going to be a make or break year. We're going to find out how good of a coach Sean McVay is, and we're going to have to find out how good Jared Goff is at some point, and this is that year.
I love your take on it. I love the optimism. Why not be optimistic on it for now? Thanks for the call on it. And I will say, I had the opportunity covering college football a couple of years ago. Kep and I and Darrell Henderson, I talk to Memphis all the time, good buddies out there, and I work with their ESPN affiliate a lot. So they tipped me to Darrell Henderson before his last year at Memphis. We spent a lot of time breaking him down before the draft last year. I think he's going to be a star. He's a stud, and he's going to be capable of putting up big yards for the Rams. So I think you're right about that. Darrell Henderson's going to be a household name, I think, by the end of this year. If you missed any of the show today, including the interview that we just did with Lindsay Theory to cover all things Rams or the future of college basketball and the NBA with Sean Farnham, you can go check it out on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by the Capital One Quicksilver Card, earning a limited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. What is in your wallet? Coming up, the Last Dance documentary drops Sunday. The First Take crew talked to one of Michael Jordan's former teammates earlier today. You'll hear that next. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. When it comes to insurance, State Farm's the real deal with over 19,000 local agents and an award-winning mobile app. You can get the help you need when you need it. Find an agent or get a quote at statefarm.com. It's that simple to go out and get yourself a quote. So we're going to get The Last Dance this weekend. And when you have The Last Dance coming, that means we're going to be all eyes are on the Chicago Bulls. We'll take more of your take in just a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. What's it mean that Jalen Green has decided to skip college basketball and instead is going to go to the G League? What's it mean for the future of college basketball? We'll take some of your take on that. But before we get there, really cool moment today. B.J. Armstrong, who you might remember from those Bulls teams, looked like he was about 12 years old and shot the ball lights out. DJ joined First Take today to talk about what it was like playing with Michael Jordan.
Life with Michael was much different because we knew we had perhaps the greatest closer to ever play the game. And we knew if the game was close, especially in the last 4 minutes of a game, that we had an opportunity and more times than not we were going to win that game. What we found out once Jordan left is that we could still play the game at a very high level, but we didn't have that closer. We didn't have the guy who can consistently night in and night out when all things broke down, especially in a playoff series, that he can just go get us a basket or go get us a shot and do what needed to do. Not only on the offensive end, but you must remember, Stephen A., that he was just as good as he was on the offensive end, he was probably just as good or that much better on the defensive end as well.
BJ, there's a story that I read about Jordan after the hiatus at playing baseball, coming back and challenging you, or you were challenging him to a game of one-on-one, and he had his street clothes on. Do you remember that story?
Well, Max, I don't like you to remind me about stories like that. I know he would call me during the course of that year, and we would always just check in. I would always check in on him just to see how he was doing. And he called me one day and said he was in town and would you want to go to breakfast? So I said, sure, I have practice at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. Let's meet and we'll chat a little bit. And one thing led to another. And before I knew it, we were playing a one-on-one. He was in his street clothes and I have to admit here on national television that I was beat by a man in street clothes, and I was dressed, practiced, ready to go. So no excuses here. And but if I'm going to lose to one person in street clothes, if it has to be Michael Jordan, I'm okay.
First, take your take on ESPN News and ESPN Radio. Yeah, BJ Armstrong having a little bit of self-awareness there. Let's face it, it being if losing to Jordan one-on-one was the metric that you judged your own personal success by, virtually everybody would be a loser. All right, so can't wait for that on Sunday. We don't want to miss it. In the meantime, we've been asking for some of your take on what it means that Jalen Green has decided to forego college basketball and go straight to the G League. Not used to seeing that. Jordan in North Carolina, what's it mean for college basketball? What's your take on it?
Hey, Jason, thanks for taking my call, man. Hope you're doing well.
Heck yeah, man.
I think that, yeah, thanks, man. I think in the short term, it does affect the quality of the game at the college level because, you know, Duke versus North Carolina is a lot more interesting when you get to see Zion and R.J. Barrett go against, you know, someone like Coby White. But at the same time, you know, those guys who are using college like a pit stop, why not just let them go make their money? Because the scholarship that someone like, honestly, a Cole Anthony takes could go to a guy who wants to play at North Carolina and who wants to have the college experience and be there 4 years. So I think in the long run, you'll start to see some of those great teams that we haven't seen in the last couple of years because it's been a revolving door of one and done. What's your take on that?
No, I love what you're saying. And look, I can't say this loud enough. We always look at college athletes and say, well, what about education? And they need to worry about going to school, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I'm unless you hold that same standard to your child actors and your child pop stars, the last time I checked, nobody ever sat down during Britney Spears' meltdown and said, man, I wonder if life would have been easier for her if she went to college. Like, that doesn't happen. You don't sit there when you're at a Justin Timberlake concert and think about the fact that he didn't go to a normal high school, right? You don't think about any of those things when it comes to that. We only do when it affects the sports that you love. That's the way so many people react to this. And realistically, what's best for college basketball, I think, is to return to what it used to be. It wasn't a generation ago where you got into guys that you knew were going to stay for multiple years. And I've used the example because this year it was one of the best and most heartbreaking stories in all of college basketball was the personal difficulties for Cassius Winston, somebody that is just synonymous with Michigan State basketball, not just for now, forever. Why? Because he stayed as long as he did and had the tremendous sustained success that he did. There's an opportunity in my mind for college basketball to continue to grow. Fans are always going to love their favorite school. But if you have players staying longer, they'll fall in love with some of those players. That's an actual win opportunity that comes. And if it means the cream of the crop goes off elsewhere, that's fine too. The guys that want to go get paid can get paid and it can still be just fine for the future of college basketball. That's for us today. That's it for us. Coming up next, after the NFL draft is all said and done, will the supply for quarterbacks be higher than demand? Will Cain, we'll dive into that next. Thanks for listening to First Take Your Take. You guys make this a great day for me. I appreciate it.